From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And love to open the show that way. And we're rejoicing and glad that we're going to be joined by Blake Young, the president and CEO of Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services. Blake, good day to you.
Good day to you, Bob. Nice to hear your voice.
Nice to hear your voice. Today, Friday, a big day for you guys there at the food bank. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, we're really excited. Given all the craziness going on, you know what? People can go down to the store and grab a couple turkeys with their kids and bring them on down to us, and we're going to be able to give some wonderful Thanksgiving meals to folks in our community.
That's good.
And
let's not confuse those up. Grab the kids, get the turkeys, and give you the turkeys, not the kids.
Well, that's right. Our turkey drive, we like to say, offers a nice teachable moment for young parents.
It really does.
Yep. It does. So we're super excited, and we're just, I think our community's ready to get past what's been going on and celebrate and help people in need, for sure.
Yeah, that's something I think we can all get on the same page with, and it's one of the ways to unite us in a sort of a divided time. And you're so right about it being a teachable moment for the kids, whether it's a food drive, a turkey drive. Sometimes you adopt a family at Christmas time and taking the kids out shopping and putting in their mind that this is going to go to a family like ours, and this is something they need. And kids, those are lessons that stay with them.
Oh, for sure. And, growing up in Catholic schools and working at a soup kitchen or just being involved in the community through our school and high school, I there's just a lot I learned, and there's a perspective you gain in some of these little teachable moments. So I love nothing more than to see young parents bring their kids down, and it's such a joyful occasion. And then it's also, like we talk about, it's an opportunity to talk about, there's kids just like you that don't quite have what you have, and I think it's really impactful.
So turkeys fresh or frozen?
You bet. I suspect if you go to a grocery store today, you're probably going to get, or tomorrow, you're going to get frozen simply because we're a little bit further away from Thanksgiving, but whatever you got, we'll take.
Yeah, that's it. I learned the hard way one year that it takes a while for that frozen turkey to thaw.
That's funny, because you have no idea how many people throughout the years have said that exact thing. It's like, wow, I wanted a frozen turkey 2 days before Thanksgiving. I found out that I was in trouble at noon on Thanksgiving.
That's
and
right.
Hard.
This thing's not cooking, honey. Turn the oven up. It's already on 450. Yeah.
That's so funny.
Yeah. So anything else they can bring?
Oh, gosh. I mean, we're really focused on turkeys. But people really get excited about buying fixins. And, we obviously will take anything folks have. It's funny because they're, with this inflation situation and the supply chain, there is absolutely nothing that's not at risk right now coming into our community. So we are, scrambling, if you will, to get all the fixes together. And boy, if you go to the grocery store, boy, there are some empty shelves.
There really are. It's mind boggling. I mean, we got used to the toilet paper and the Clorox wipes being gone. like people laughing at you if you even ask if they had it. But now it's canned pumpkin. It's everything.
It is, and I'll tell you, Bob, kind of opposite or to go along, if you will, with the supply chain issues is inflation, and it's very difficult and challenging, we're seeing, for folks to be able to, at first, obviously we're trying to help people get through the holidays, but what I've read is you're looking at about a 50% increase in cost to put a Thanksgiving meal together.
Wow.
So if you look at buying the turkey, you know, again, in all the fixings, I mean, it's quite an expense for folks when they're already struggling to put gas in the tank and have their family and friends come over. I mean, my heart, you know, kind of tears at people that really, really stress out about having, you know, what isn't a simple meal, but it's a very important meal.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, even the gas in the car. You know, I've talked to some people that were, you know, kind of high-fiving each other, senior citizens, because they were going to get a 5.9% increase on Social Security, which is one of the highest ever. And yeah. And now they're like, that will be gone before we see it.
Well, good point. And, you know, in fact, I just read in the Wall Street Journal the other day that if you look at basic commodities, they're going up anywhere between 7, 8% to 20%.
Right.
And so, and when you look at, you know, when you look at gas, California's already high, we know.
Right.
But the issue in Sacramento County, as you and I've talked about, is, you know, the food insecurity rate's higher than the state national average, and part of it is housing costs versus what
sure.
payable jobs offer, and then you tack on inflation, and just, you know, just gas alone is another, what they said, $1.10 a gallon.
Right.
This is some serious challenges for folks that already needed our help.
Yeah, and that's from 6 months ago, which would be about a 30-35% increase on gas just in 6 months. And you know, a lot of people, because they can't afford the price of housing, they're commuting, you know, 40 miles up the valley or down the valley or into the foothills or somewhere where it's a little bit cheaper. And boy, you go 80, 100 miles a day commuting, that's a significant increase just for the fuel, no less the wear and tear on your tires and the rest of the car. So it's the single
most feedback that we get right now is we have families that lost their employment during COVID. Many have returned to work, but the hole that they dug was significant.
Yeah.
And they don't see being able to bounce back for several years. So you overlay inflation on top of that. I mean, it's just a real serious situation for folks. So, you know, it seems so simple, and I know it isn't, but it seems so simple just to go buy a couple turkeys and drive them down. But I want the listeners to know how much it means to the folks that we serve. It is extremely impactful and significant.
Very good. So you mentioned supply chain. Has that affected you very much in terms of just not being able to get things?
That's a great question. I'll answer it two ways. One, yes. We're competing with the open market. I think the majority of people think that we deal in mostly donated food, but ironically, most food banks our size buy probably 40% of their food.
Right.
So the good news is we cooperative buy with 40 other food banks in the state of California. So by volume, we do better than the average.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, what used to take, you know, 1 week to get from purchase to on our dock has taken 6 weeks.
Right.
So it's definitely, we have to be definitely more planful, and we have to be really mindful of you know, finance, because it's the cost of everything has gone up. And it's not like inflation looks at a food bank and says, oh, we're going to give you a break. Sorry, it doesn't happen that way.
Exactly. So looking on the flip side of the turkey drop-off, what about the turkey pickup?
Yeah, so we our main distribution now is at our facility to the 150 agencies.
Mm-hmm.
So in the old days, we used to do our own distribution.
But we found
what was more efficient and effective is let's focus on getting all the resources to the 100-plus agencies out throughout the county.
Right.
And we can ensure that Thanksgiving meals, groceries, et cetera, are equitably distributed throughout the county. So it works much better when we focus on sourcing, storing, right. delivering, and getting food to all of our charities. So that's going to happen next week. And then the majority of distributions, 100-plus, will happen late next week and early Thanksgiving week.
Very good. And again, talking about gas, you're getting it much closer to the people that need it.
Yeah, good point. And again, that's kind of a microcosm of how we deal with our agencies. Our agencies can't afford the fuel either. So we take that on and we deliver most of the food. And, you know, again, we're just trying to build the most efficient emergency food system network, because right now, cost of everything and just with the pandemic, we've had to change our operating model quite a bit.
So the Run to Feed the Hungry. Boy,
yeah.
we've been talking about this with fingers crossed for a few months. Looks like it's going to happen.
Yeah, Bob, we are so excited. I mean, we've worked closely with the county, Sac State, to, you know, ensure that this event's going to be as safe as possible. Obviously, there's a virtual option. And, you know, if people feel a little bit leery about doing the run, you know, they can still sign up virtually and support the organization. But, you know, and I get thousands of calls a month about, you know, just the work that we do and how excited people are. People are ready to come back to the Run to Feed the Hungry. They're excited that, you know, they're going to follow proper protocol. We're working with the county to make it as safe as possible. But we are ecstatic that we can have this, you know, 28th year tradition where the community, you know, A, gives thanks for what they have, but B, really thinks about their community members that don't have what they have and utilize the Run to Feed the Hungry to raise a ton of money and allow Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services to use that revenue to put it into programming.
Very, very good. And quickly, how can they sign up?
So runtofeedthehungry.com. It's very simple. You can register as an individual, as a family. You can register 10 of your friends, or you can build a team. You can build a team until next Friday, November 19th. You do get a special cert. But if you're just a one person or a family and you don't want to go down to Fremont Presbyterian Church the week of Run to Feed the Hungry and pick up your shirt, we will mail it directly to you. So runtofeedthehungry.com and register. It's very simple. And just know that your registration, I'll put it in perspective, if you register for the Run to Feed the Hungry, your registration fee will provide over 100 meals to folks in the community.
Wow. That's fabulous. That is just fabulous. Well, Blake, we will chat soon, but thanks for all the great work. Thanks for always being available to us, and much appreciated that everything you're doing.
Hey, Bob, thank you always for the opportunity. It's always nice to talk to you. So I wish you and your family a wonderful Thanksgiving, and thank you.
Hey, same to you and your family. Thanks, Blake. God bless. That's Blake Young, president and CEO of the Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services. And now we're pleased to welcome Father Alessio, who is doing the cause for sainthood for Bishop Gallegos, Bishop Alphonse Gallegos. We were able to talk to him the other day. We'll bring you that interview now. And we're joined by Father Alessio Gonzalez Jr., who is the vice postulator for the cause of canonization for Bishop Alphonse Gallegos. Father, good day to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Bob, and greetings to everyone there in the Diocese of Sacramento and beyond. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for being with us. It's hard to believe that you're coming through loud and clear all the way from Madrid. I mean, I was born before they had telephones, so. But it's hard to believe that just through time and space we can hear each other's voices. So it's really wonderful to have you with us. What are you doing in Madrid?
I've been assigned here in a parish. I'm an Augustinian Recollect religious. We have houses there in Southern California, and I was assigned here as a provincial counselor, and the headquarters is here in Madrid. That's one of the reasons I am here, residing in Madrid as a representative of the United States people, the friars religious there in the United States.
Okay, so are you a native Californian?
Yes, I was born in Mexico, but at 2 years of age, I grew up in Oxnard in California.
Ventura County, I think?
Ventura County, correct.
Yeah, which would still be the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, is that right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Archdiocese of Los Angeles, the Santa Barbara region.
That's such a big diocese with so many Catholics that they have to break it up into regions, don't they?
Yes, they have Bishop Barron there as a the auxiliary bishop of that region.
Right, right. As we remember him and still remember him with a word on fire, you know.
Correct.
Yeah,
correct.
Just to, we've had him on the program. We're lucky to get worked into his busy schedule, and when we do have him on, it's a real treat. So tell us about how it came to be that you are the vice postulator for Bishop Gagos and also the cause of sainthood, and also what does that mean?
Yes, I was assigned when I was a young, newly ordained priest to take up an assignment when they established the tribunal there in the Diocese of Sacramento, the official tribunal that were going to form part of the team to investigate the life and the virtues of Bishop Alfonso to present to Rome. So they selected me, my superior, as an Augustinian Recollect. And now we've been working on the cause since 2005. We gathered first there was a biography written about Bishop Alfonso, the Bishop of the Barrio, the life of Bishop Alfonso Gallegos. And after that, there began a more thorough investigation into his life. And we began the process to see if his cause would move further. In 2005, with the official opening, with the permission of Vatican, the Congregation of the Saints, to begin investigating more thoroughly the life of the bishop. And in 2006, we presented all that documentation to Rome. They reviewed it. In 2016, the cardinals and bishops, and then the Holy Father, Pope Francis, signed off on that document, the Posizio, the presentation of the life and virtues of Bishop Alfonso, declaring him venerable in 2016. So his life is one to be imitated and to seek his intercession. And now we're hoping and praying for two miracles, one for his beatification and a second for his canonization.
So it's a multi-step process for sure. Where did the initial, in 2005, do you approach the Vatican, or did the Vatican approach you and say, we want somebody to look into this?
Like I mentioned, it began with the biography, and the author of that biography, Father John Oldfield, God rest his soul, he when he interviewed people that knew Bishop Gallegos, the thought came to him to present this to the postulator. The postulator is a representative we have in Rome from our congregation, the Augustinian Recollects. And then he coordinates with the Vatican. He was the one that petitioned the Vatican if we could proceed, and also getting, first of all, the permission of the Diocese of Sacramento and to get the okay. And then once we had the okay, then we proceeded.
Very good. Wow. So that sounds like, it sounds like, it reminds me of my college days. It sounds like an enormous term paper. It's going to take many years.
It was the final document that the Congregation of the Saints read. Those that are in that office, was a document of over 600 pages.
Oh, wow.
His life, medical records, his grades. And then, of course, the heart of the document is the testimony of the people that actually met the bishop and what they had to say about him. It's based on that testimony, and then what is being investigated is the virtues, if Bishop Alfonso practiced heroic virtue. And of course, we summarized all the virtues based on the testimonies that we gathered. And every virtue we go down and summarize and then present, it's making a case to the Vatican that Bishop Alfonso practiced heroic virtue. That's what we're trying to prove with this documentation.
Is heroic?
Which was approved that he did practice heroic virtue based on the testimony of the witnesses, 130 witnesses that spoke on behalf of Bishop Alfonso.
Is a heroic virtue a general term, or are these specific things?
This is a specific that he wasn't just a good person, but there was something about him that it was was moved by the Holy Spirit that he was able to forgive others who maybe spoke ill of him, or, you know, charity beyond, you know, just being nice. It's forgiving those who treat you ill, going out to serve the needy in a heroic manner. That's really what's trying to prove that.
And how do you find the witnesses? You know, 130 of them.
Well, it everything came into place. I really see the hand of God behind it. First of all, inspiring. There was a meeting of religious there in Oxnard, I believe it was Oxnard or in New York. And after Bishop Gallegos is passing, it was a provincial council and provincial chapter, which we have every 3 or 4 years to evaluate our life and then plan for the future, what we're going to focus on. And in that provincial chapter, they determined that a biography be written about Bishop Gallegos. He died in 1991, and this idea came about in 1999, I believe. And they began to do the biography, and it was through that biography, which was inspired by the priest religious gathering in that provincial chapter, that this kind of took on a life of its own, by inspired by the Holy Spirit, that inspired those religious to write a biography about him. And then the witnesses, the author of the book, he knew some of those people that were interviewed for the book, and then I branched out. That's when I got to work contacting them, and if they knew other people that had known the bishop, if they'd like to testify on his behalf. And that's how we kind of branched out, and we gathered all these witnesses.
Where did were most of the witnesses in the Diocese of Sacramento, or are they people that knew him as a younger man?
We kind of put the puzzle together, which was beautiful. We had, I could break it down about, the math probably will not come out roughly, but it was like 40-some witnesses in the Diocese of Sacramento, another 40, 45 in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. in the Archdiocese, and about another 20 or so in New York, in the Archdiocese of New York in Suffern, and then another 10 or so that we wrote to them and we contacted them and then we interviewed them later as well. But it was childhood friends. They had some people in Los Angeles that went to school with him. They were in grade school with him. Mm. And even then, that he was different from the other children, that they called him the little holy one. You know, they even baptized, they called him that. Mm. And then we had people that met him as a pastor in San Miguel in Watts, and then as a bishop in Sacramento. So we see all the different facets of his life that people were able to speak on his behalf, and family members as well, a sister of his, Senna, and a brother, I believe, as well. And so we had a good feel of the entire life of Bishop Gallegos based on the testimony.
So he was incarnated in the Archdiocese of Los Angeles?
He wasn't incarnated. He was an Augustinian Recollect.
Okay.
A religious, and he was living in Watts in San Miguel Church, mm-hmm. and then in Cristo Rey Church in Los Angeles. And then from Los Angeles, that's where he was sent to the Diocese of Sacramento. He left the religious community to serve at the state level. Mm-hmm. We thought it was going to be a temporary assignment. Then he would return to the religious order, Augustinian Recollect order, but then he was later made auxiliary bishop. He headed up in 1979 the Office of Hispanic Affairs. Mm-hmm. They had opened that office in 1979, and he was slated to be the head of that office. And in 1981, he was appointed auxiliary bishop of Sacramento, to his surprise and to many others.
Almost every bishop I've talked to has told me that he was very surprised when he got that call saying that he was going to be a bishop. Or, you know,
yes.
I suspect it really does sort of knock you off your pins when that happens.
Oh, Yes, definitely, definitely. It's interesting. I don't know if I shared that in the diary of Bishop Gallegos. He has a diary. There's a diary, and it's basically where he was that day, who he met with. But that particular day, it has a couple of paragraphs where he writes down his emotions, how he was surprised, shocked, humbled, but he just had to pray and ask God to, if that really was his will, to help him to be courageous to accept the appointment, and he eventually did.
So did he grow up in Los Angeles area?
Yes, he grew up in Los Angeles in Watts. Mm-hmm. In the inner city there in Watts, he grew up there, and then he went to Kansas City, where he entered the religious community, the Augustina Recollect Order, and then he was ordained a priest in the Archdiocese of New York, in Suffern, New York, in 1958, and then he served there in the Archdiocese because he had poor vision, as many people
right.
remember and know. He was limited to internal ministry for about 14 years after ordination because he suffered with myopia and poor vision, so they were concerned, well, what are we going to do? He's a very good religious, very good priest, but we're afraid with his poor eyesight. So he was chaplain to religious communities of sisters there, chaplain to the hospital just going across the street, the formation with the students. And it wasn't until about 14 years later that he was appointed pastor of his home parish, where he had been an altar server.
Mm-hmm.
So that was quite a homecoming.
And what was the parish again? It was in Watts?
San Miguel, yes.
San Miguel, yeah. Wow.
It's a small church, but that's where he grew up, and he was pastor there. And that's where he really made a difference in the people's lives there in the inner city. Back in those days, and still not as bad now, but a lot of poverty, a lot of gang violence, and he arrived
sure.
and he brought a lot of hope and optimism and faith to those children. He worked a lot with the education of the children. He raised the tuition up to 350 students there in that school. He tapped into Hollywood, the actors, and to other people from the outside the community to help their community. And that's where he really made a name for himself, and that's where Cardinal Manning, at the time of our Archdiocese of Los Angeles, took notice, and he put him in positions in the Archdiocese, the formation of the permanent deacons and all other ministries there in the Archdiocese. So that's why when this office opened in 1979, Hispanic Affairs at the state level, Father Gallegos at the time had had a good reputation of his work in Watts in there in San Miguel Parish. He was well known throughout the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, the work he had done in a matter of 6 years.
It must have been really difficult for him emotionally to leave that all behind.
Yeah, it was, but he was such a people person that he just saw it as an opportunity to reach a wider community at the state level. He loved everyone, every nationality, every believer, non-believer, every culture, he loved everyone. But he headed up the Hispanic Affairs office to reach out to the Hispanic community, which was growing and continues to grow in the United States. And he just continued doing what he did in Los Angeles, visiting the families in their homes, walking out, speaking to the young people at night, and bringing them to the church, bringing them into the church, and reaching out to the Hispanic community with catechetical programs and at the state level. And so he just continued basically doing what he loved to do, be with his people.
Yeah, and we don't have as many people as the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, but we have a wide territory here, and many people certainly I grew up in this diocese, and we all knew of Bishop Gallegos, now, of course, the Bishop Gallegos Maternity Home is named after him here in...
Bob, it's in the testimony it came up how... You know, the territorial, you might not have a big population, but territory-wise, the territory is pretty vast. From one point to the other, I understand it can be 4 hours in the diocese to get one point to the other.
300 miles. Bishop Gallegos. Yeah, 300 miles.
Yeah, Bishop Gallegos traveled all the way. I don't know if Reading is the last city before.
Well, Reading's the about, believe it or not, only about halfway up the diocese, but it's the last sort of major city before the Oregon border. And
I've heard stories he got all the way up to Reading. There's a spiritual center out there where he used to go. He loved being in with nature.
Mm-hmm.
Something they want to, like, there's a little prayer center there. They want to put a picture of something of Bishop Gallegos, because they've commented to me he would go there for prayer and get away.
It might have been in Vina, where there's there are a number of places for sure, and the diocese stretches from the south part of Sacramento County all the way to the Oregon border, encompasses 20 counties, 300 miles long, and probably close to 150 miles wide. Goes all the way to Nevada, all the way to the Pacific Ocean. It's huge, and he was notorious. You're right
He traveled all over the diocese. He traveled. It is incredible.
Yeah. So, and even the day he died, he was traveling.
Yes, he was doing what he would normally did. You know, it was a busy morning. He went. He presided mass there at Our Lady of Guadalupe Church in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
Then he went to visit. He went to a pro-life march, and then he went to visit a young man who was dying of AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
And then he finished up the day, confirmation, he presided a confirmation mass in Sacred Heart in Gridley.
In Gridley, and which is up the valley Gridley. A couple hours.
That's where he presided the mass confirmation of about 40 young men and women. And then he was returning back Sacramento when his car broke down. His car broke down, and that's where he got out of the car. His driver, he always had a driver with him because of his poor vision.
Right.
So he got out of the car, and he had Bishop Gallegos pushing his car out of the road. And that's another car came on and killed them there, unfortunately, there on Highway 99.
Highway 99, yep.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I've traveled that road so many times, right through Gridley, and I think of Bishop Gallegos.
We visited Sacred Heart Church in Gridley, you know, to honor the memory of Bishop. We presided a mass there, knowing that was the last church where he said presided mass. And people there in the parish, and they comment that people, like you mentioned, that when they pass by that area where they believe Bishop Gallegos died, that they remember him, or they say a prayer,
right,
or remember him. That the people in the diocese, a lot of people know that's where he died.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, and what a sad day that was for all of us here in the diocese. He was.
Yeah, Bob. So you were. You can remember. I've only read about it and heard about it, but it was a sad, from what I gathered, that the media was all over the story in the papers,
right,
the news, a lot of people in the funeral mass days following. But it was a sad day. It was a sad day. He was such a wonderful man, always thinking about others, giving himself totally, and living out his motto, love one another, the commandment of Jesus Christ. And that's why people suffered so greatly with his passing, because they had fond memories of him, of his closeness, of how he visited their home, visited their community, and just having spent a moment with him or gotten to know him. So,
yeah, and, you know, in the media, really were the members of the media were really fond of him, because he was such a straight shooter. He was such a man of God. He was such a man full of love for all of God's creation, including those of us known as human beings, that the media really, really deeply respected him and appreciated him.
Yeah, he was, because he just had, he was a, like you said, he was a man of God. He was man, the Bishop Alfonso spent a lot of time in prayer. We've documented that from people that cleaned his house, and they can testify to that. They testified. So that's what he gave people, the God's love that he nurtured in prayer. And he was so down to earth that he connected with people. He had a good conversation. He can speak about any topic, basically. And he was just so warm and genuine. And thank you for sharing that. That's what I've heard. That's what I've heard.
Yeah, he just, you know, sometimes whether you're a bishop or a priest, and, you know, our church takes its shots, you know, and for a variety of reasons, but he kind of rose above all of that because he was such a man of God and such a man of love, you know, and it radiated from, you know. You must have some pictures that I haven't seen, I'm sure, but every picture I ever saw of Bishop Gallegos, it was that radiant smile. He almost came alive on the photograph itself.
Yes, that's one of the unique qualities that people speak about, is you could not miss his smile.
Yep.
You know, or his laughter. You know, his laughter, his genuine smile. And every day was a glorious, a wonderful day for him. He just had that optimism, and that radiated in the way he went about his life. He just had that trust and faith in God that everything would be fine, and trusting in God. And that's why he was so optimistic and always joyful. Of course, he had his difficulties. There's also testimony how sometimes he was a little tired, a little down emotionally, as any human being. But he visits someone's home, his vision, they've told us, just give me a second. Mm-hmm. And he'd go to the backyard and he'd spend a little moment in prayer, and he'd come back, okay. And
he was, yeah.
It's going to be fine.
Wow. We're talking with Father Eliseo Gonzalez, all the way from Madrid, Spain. He is the vice postulator working on the canonization for Bishop Gallegos. So what happens now? Where do we go from here?
Well, now, thank you once again for having me on the Bishop's Hour, Bob. This is part, what we're being on this program is to make the life of Bishop Alfonso Gallegos known to, more known for some people who have not heard about him, and also to seek information about him. There's plenty of information on the internet, and now, I don't know if you're aware that a great development among others, the Diocese of Sacramento has placed some information on their website. Mm-hmm. It's on the Sacramento on the diocesan website,
right,
of Sacramento, and it has a link there of Bishop Gallegos where people can see the documentary. There's a documentary about Bishop Gallegos that aired on EWTN, They Might Be Saints. It's a series of possible saints in the United States. It's a series. And also other information where people can know more about Bishop Gallegos, his life, and to try to imitate his virtues, but also to pray for his canonization. There's a prayer there to pray for his canonization, and also to seek his intercession. What we need now is people to pray for his cause, and also to ask for his intercession in any particular need. But especially what we need is two miracles to be documented through his intercession, which is a medical illness that has no cure. There's no medical cure for this illness. And the person prays to God, asking Bishop Gallegos' intercession, and the person is healed instantaneously and permanently. That's what we need to, and then of course we need to investigate, we need to document this supposed miracle, and then investigate it further and present it to Rome if the case is a promising case. So that's why being on the, having his life known through various means is a wonderful way of getting the life of Bishop Gallegos out there, be known, and also people pray for his intercession.
Yeah, we should point out, and I think there's some misunderstanding of this, that the miracles are not while he was walking the earth. The miracles are since he died, as proof of intercession.
Correct, Bob. And as you know, and the audience knows that this is the Vatican, humanly speaking, we've done all that we could do to establish that Bishop Gallegos' practice of life of heroic virtue to be worthy of being considered a saint. Now, through these miracles, through the God, through the intercession of Bishop Alfonso, it's putting further proof that he is in heaven and he is worthy of being considered a saint. So that would be one step, one miracle, beatification, and then a second miracle documented, investigated thoroughly, and then that would be the second miracle for his canonization. So the miracle, only God is possible of doing, only God can do miracles. Nothing's impossible for God.
That's
Bishop
right.
Gallegos he's an intercessor. People pray to God through Bishop Gallegos for a particular need, and then if the miracle is granted, then we can document it, and then the cause is able to move forward.
And of course, if the miracle is performed, you still have to find out about it.
Exactly.
You know, somebody has to notify you that this has happened in their life.
Exactly. I've followed up on some cases, but not miracles per se, but many interesting stories. But I find out about them about 2 or 3 years later. But there's many, many beautiful stories out there that I've heard when I spent time in California since 2005 working on the cause, distributing holy cards in the various parishes where I've gone. And then people come back a month, a couple of weeks later, a year later, Father, this happened to me. I prayed. I had my son had problems in school, and then I prayed to the bishop, and he's doing well, or different people unemployed. I can tell you stories, but I don't think we have much time. But they're very interesting stories and how people. But yes, like you said, we need to know about it. We need to be contacted. That's why if people who find out about a miracle in the future or know of someone, they can reach out to the Diocese of Sacramento. On that website, they have an email. They can contact us so we can follow up on it. Or even if it's not a miracle, even a favor is worth communicating because we'll document it, and then we can post that on the website or use it in different means, and so people can know that Bishop Gallegos is truly interceding for the faithful, and that also promotes his fame of sanctity.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Like you say, you mentioned somebody. Maybe their son was struggling in school, and they prayed to Bishop Gallegos for his intercession, and feel like that definitely happened. It doesn't fit the definition for canonization, because that's a medical situation. But it still, in my mind, fits the definition of a miracle. Or proof that yes, he did intercede, intercession.
Yes, for the people, they sometimes intertwine. They say it's a favor, but for them, they can tell you the story of how they were struggling.
Right.
I can tell you briefly of a case of a young lady who was there in UC Davis, studying in UC Davis.
Wow.
She could not. She applied for a grant program as a freshman, and she applied and she was denied. She had just arrived from Mexico about 3-4 years before. Anyway, she applied freshman year, sophomore year, and she was denied. So finally, she applied against all hope on her senior year, and she was called and she was given the grant.
Wow.
She was praying to Bishop Gallegos, and even the people that called her in, I don't know why we called you, but here you are, and can you fill this out? And they interviewed her. Now she's studying at UC Davis.
Oh.
So she was very desperate. She was, you know, going to Mass on Sundays, praying, and she just didn't lose hope, didn't lose faith, and she prayed to Bishop, and there she is at UC Davis. That's one of many stories.
Wow.
She truly believes it was Bishop Gallegos' intercession. As you know, as people know, he loved the youth. He loved everyone, but he was very fond of the youth and always wanting them to better their education.
Father, that story goes straight to my heart because I live in Davis, and I'm a UC Davis grad. My dad's a UC Davis grad. My daughter is a UC Davis junior, and another daughter is a UC Davis grad. So when you tell a miracle story about UC Davis, that really warms my heart.
Yes. So Bishop Gallegos, that's one of several stories, but there's others, but for times... I can share one last one real quick. A young mother had her young child go first days of school, and the child would not stop crying. I think several weeks had gone by. She dropped her child off at school, you know, first year of school.
Right.
Crying, and she was desperate. And she just, in her desperation, in her frustration, she started praying to Bishop Gallegos with her little car. She went to the car. And she comes back, and the child was fine after that, you know, and just stories like that. But to her, it was something incredible.
Well, yeah, you know, that's exactly right, Father. You know, we all have times in our life where we truly feel like we've been blessed with a miracle. Sometimes it's medical, sometimes it's something completely like what you said, or the young lady at UC Davis. But it's a miracle nonetheless.
Yes, but you know, in the case of canonization causes, you're aware, Rome is very careful that
we
do not use that word miracle lightly.
Yep.
You know, that's why they have to investigate it and determine and say it's a miracle. But people, the faithful, the common folk use that word. You know, they say, Father, it was a miracle. To me, it's a miracle.
Sure.
I mean, you can't take that away from them. But only Rome officially, we would say it's a favor. It's a favor, a blessing. Mm-hmm. But the word miracle, we try to be careful with that term, respect that only the church, the church is, in these cases of canonization, can determine a miracle for a cause to move forward.
Oh, absolutely. And as I understand it, the committee that will review all this is rigorous and is not necessarily made up strictly of Catholics.
Exactly. There's a... Different people involved, lay people, and like you said, not necessarily Catholics either, because to avoid the being biased, you know.
Sure, they don't want a rubber stamp.
No. They especially when it comes to the doctors, I believe, far as I know. When it comes, but the theologians, they have to be Catholic and investigate. But when it comes to medical doctors, that they certify if this has any medical explanation, they can be. You know, science is science.
Right. They almost like they want a skeptic or two
to
say no. This is we've seen this happen 100 times, or you know, that is medically possible, or but because they don't want to just be passing out sainthood right, left, and sideways, and then some of it comes back and they go, oh well, I think maybe we made a mistake on that one, you know.
No,
so yeah,
very serious matter that has to be authenticated and approved by the church after thorough investigation with with medical doctors on the team.
Which is why it takes so long. One of the reason it takes so long. I mean, this one is not, in the history of the church, not especially long, even though it may seem long to us.
Yeah, it's a matter of people knowing about a particular case of sainthood, a particular woman, religious, in the process of canonization, and they seek their intercession, and then the miracle is granted, and then they notify the proper authorities. That's a key, as you mentioned. If we need to hear about these supposed miracles to follow up on them. So if anybody out there of the audience, if they know or receive in the future or have, but it has to be after Bishop Gallegos has died, after his death.
Right.
But there are many stories during his lifetime as well, many interesting blessings that people received during his lifetime in his presence.
Do you have one you want to share with us?
Well, there's one I can remember when he went. Well, there's so many, but one that came to mind, the one in the hospital there in Sacramento. He received a call in Our Lady of Guadalupe Church, and he went to the hospital, and he arrived at the hospital. The father and the mother were very desperate. They had been notified that their child was going to die. He said, I don't know what faith you practice, but if you're Catholic or whatever your faith, I recommend you go get a pastor to come here because your child will not make it through the night. Mm-hmm. He's a 2-year-old child, and all of a sudden she just got very ill and rushed to the hospital. So there is a father desperate, trying to call different parishes. They couldn't get a hold of one. They were busy or they couldn't get a hold of one. So Bishop Gallegos arrives at the hospital by mistake, supposedly. He runs into the father in the hallway, and the father, he was a parishioner of Our Lady of Guadalupe Church, and the bishop, what are you doing here? I said, what are you doing? They said, what are you doing here? And they told him the situation of her child, and Bishop walked into the room, and your child will be fine. The doctors had told the parents the child was going to die. He went in there, he prayed. He closed his eyes and he said, your child will be fine.
Wow.
But Bishop, the doctor just told us she's going to die. She's not going to die. But please baptize her. She hasn't been baptized. I'm going to baptize her, but she's not going to die. And once she recovers, I want you to take her to Our Lady of Guadalupe Church to thank Our Lady, because she is here also. And he blessed her, prayed over her, and he left. And the child is probably in her 20s now.
Wow.
Older. So, well, that was a very special. And so that was one of the many testimonies that I heard directly, you know, from the father. He shared this story. So that just highlights his faith and how he was so spiritual and God. He was able to say something contradictory to what the doctors had said. Like, how do you explain that? Maybe. And it happened.
Maybe he should have gone to medical school. it takes a while to tell it, so I won't tell it today. But our family had our young boy was in neonatal ICU right after he was born with severe breathing difficulties, and we knew that it was real touch and go, and Our Lady of Guadalupe. I remember is they only had one phone in the neonatal. He's 16 now and healthy as a horse, but they only had one phone there, and my sister from Tucson called me, and I said, Sister Joe, I need a miracle. And she said, you're going to get it. And I hung up, and there was a little boy right next to it, because there are all these babies in the neonatal ICU, and the baby next to us was a little boy named Diego. And yeah, I know. And
yeah.
And his father walked in, and all he was wearing was a plain white T-shirt. And he didn't speak any English, and I spoke very little Spanish. And we looked at each other, two fathers with a sick child, and we knew we were brothers at that moment. And then he turned around to tend to Diego, and I could see his back, and the entire back of his shirt was the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe, and on it it said El Milagro de Tepeyac, and the miracle. And about 15 minutes later, the doctor came in, and he said, "Your little boy's going to be fine."
Yeah.
Well, you know, and so you mentioned Our Lady of Guadalupe and Bishop Gallegos. Yeah. I'm right there.
Yeah, so that's, thank you, that's beautiful to hear that testimony, that experience you had. I can only only feel what you felt at that moment, that the experiences, that it's powerful. It's powerful powerful experience, and that God's always with us. He's there in Our Lady, our Blessed Mother, Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was the story of Bishop Gallegos, that he closed his eyes and your child will be fine. Our Lady is here as well. So bring her to Our Lady of Guadalupe Church to thank her after she recovers. She's here with us. And
so wonderful.
Beautiful story. So this has been a wonderful experience. I mean, being with you, Bob, sharing, and so many wonderful people that I've met that knew Bishop Gallegos, and hearing the testimonies of how God has blessed them in a particular way through the intercession of Bishop Gallegos, or his friendship, his closeness, his encouragement.
Yeah. Well, Father, if you're ever in this area, or if I'm ever in Madrid, I sure hope our paths cross again.
Oh, yes, Bob, definitely. I was thinking that. I was out in California I just arrived a couple of weeks ago, but I was supposed to get up to Sacramento, visit there, Our Lady Guadalupe Church, and then pray before the mortal remains of Bishop Gallegos there in the shrine of Our Lady Guadalupe in Sacramento. Unfortunately, I didn't get up there, but God willing, we'll have to connect and so hopefully see each other, meet each other in person.
That would be wonderful. I'll buy lunch.
Oh, great.
Very good. Great. Father, thanks so much. God's blessings to you, and thanks for all you're doing. It means a lot to everyone here in the Diocese of Sacramento.
No, it's a joy for me. It's truly a blessing. To be sharing the life of Bishop Gallegos, a true example of now what they're going to be celebrating, All Saints Day, you know, all the saints, but Bishop Gallegos is on the path. And he said, we're all called to holiness, but we must strive for holiness. In other words, we must correspond to God's grace and do what we need to do to love God above all things and our neighbor. And that's what he did, and what all the saints did, love God and their neighbor. Love one another. That's Bishop Gallegos, a true human, gentle soul, a loving man, and joyful and caring person.
Father, thanks so much. God bless, and I'm sure we'll see each other again soon.
God bless. Thank you for having me, and thank you to all the audience on the Bishop's Hour, and blessings to you and all of God's people there in the Diocese of Sacramento, which we always remember fondly because we have one of our own, our brother Bishop Gallegos, there in the diocese. His mortal remains. May God bless you all.
Thanks so much. I greatly appreciate it. God bless. That's Father Alicio Gonzalez, Jr., Vice Postulator for the cause of canonization for Bishop Alphonse Gallegos. Yeah, wow. What a story that is. And it's just mind-boggling how tears at my heart to hear the stories. And I know there are a whole bunch more. I'd love to have my hands on the 600 pages of testimony about Bishop Alphonse Gallegos. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this.
we stand and lift up our hands, for the joy of the Lord is our strength. We bow down and worship Him now. How great